Hello and welcome to another podcast from Sussex Cricket Museum. Today, I think autumn's definitely come. Clocks go back at the weekend and England are almost out of the World Cup. But we're at Hove, it's a beautiful day. The grass is looking so green. We're sitting in the pavilion and looking out across the ground towards the scoreboard. And I've got two guests with me today. Regina Sudarsay-Khan, we've already heard from her in the past on a podcast that we did earlier. And Regina plays for Sussex women's cricket teams. She also plays for Italy. She played an international game where she had the amazing figures of 4-for-1, which I'm sure our guest will be aiming to get. Regina is going to have a chat with our guest today, who played for Sussex. He plays for England as well. He's got a white ball contract for Sussex. His best bowling is 4-for-13. And he's taken 232 T20 wickets, an average of 23.04. I think one thing that Regina would probably like is that our guest today was signed by Royal Challengers Bangalore for 1.4 million a couple of years ago. But we'll have a chat about that later. So hello, Regina.
Hello, thank you again for having me. It's very exciting to be here, especially with our guests.
Our guest today is Tamal Mills. Hello, Tamal.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me.
So I'll pass over to Regina and Tamal to have a chat. And let's see where we get to.
Awesome. So first of all, welcome to Tamal Mills. It's absolutely awesome to have you here. A big fan myself, so very cool to see you here. How was your break recently?
Yeah, so busy summer, played in the Blast here, of course. Then I went to Zimbabwe, played in a T10 competition, and then straight from there, came back and played in the 100s. So, my season finished first week of September. Had some time off, caught up with family. I was pretty away for those couple of months, so back to dad duties, and then just kind of family holidays and things like that, just trying to spend a bit of time at home. And now I'm just I've got about another month before I head off for winter competitions, so just kind of balancing spending some time at home with the family, and then just coming in here and training and gymming and things like that before the winter starts for me.
Awesome. I can imagine it's a long cricket season for you. I don't think you get much of a break. So if we talk about kind of the origins of your cricket, so originally you started your career at Essex. Can you actually tell us your journey from your beginnings? And we also understand that you wanted to pursue journalism, and now you've become a worldwide name in cricket. How has that journey kind of been for you?
I guess the path I arrived at cricket is the one less trodden, I guess. I grew up in Suffolk, minor county, kind of 3 hours away from here. I didn't play cricket growing up at all. I never played cricket at all until I was 14. And even by then, it was because my friend who played, his team was short and they needed another player. So basically where I grew up, cricket isn't kind of played a huge amount, certainly not school. I went to state school and it was only really the private schools that played cricket, and the town I grew up in didn't really have a cricket team, so it wasn't the most accessible sport to me. So I played football, I played basketball, did rugby, I did pretty much every other sport aside from cricket. Once I started playing cricket, I really enjoyed it, and it was obvious that I had a natural ability at it, and it was I could bowl fast. I was very wild. I didn't really know what I was doing with it, and some people would argue I still don't now. But I had natural ability, and that was kind of always encouraged and pushed, and I quickly progressed through club cricket, through minor counties with Sussex, and then I kind of got scouted by Essex by the time I was 17, and then at 18 years old, I did my A-levels at school, and then I was on a kind of a junior pro contract, they were called back then, so not quite a full professional contract. So when I was 18, I left home and moved down to London, went to uni to do journalism, as you mentioned, because it was always something I had an interest in, and at that point I didn't know where cricket was going to go. Unfortunately I didn't finish that degree, because by my second year at university I was full-time professional with Essex, I got picked on an England Lions tour, I think, as well. So I was overseas in the winters, and obviously it was a struggle to do my studies. So I deferred with the view to try and maybe go back at some point and finish off my degree. But thankfully for me, cricket's gone pretty well. But I do a lot of media work now as it is, and do a lot of TV and broadcasting as well as playing. So hopefully the few skills that I picked up at uni have gone to good use.
Fair enough. I mean, you can't argue with the career that you've had. I think you made the right choice there. So, no, that was brilliant to hear kind of like your journey, and especially coming through state school, because obviously it's a big argument at the moment that private school cricket is kind of the main producer of cricketers. But obviously seeing yourself coming through that pathway and playing cricket from actually a later age than I would have expected, that's really great to hear. So thank you for that. As we said, so 232 List A T20 wickets with best figures of 4/13. You are a Sussex legend, definitely very well received by the crowds. How do you feel about Sussex now being your home, and kind of your progression through Sussex through the years?
Yeah, it's a funny one. I left Essex when I was 22, I believe. I had a lot of injuries. I was injured at the time of leaving Sussex. Essex hadn't offered me a contract. And the winter previous, Mark Robinson, who was the head coach at Sussex, he was my head coach on the England Lions, so he was a bit of familiarity there. So I came down, took a meeting with Robbo and with Ed Joyce, who was the captain at the time here. I had a couple of friends who lived down here as well, and it was a place I felt very comfortable with. And I initially signed to play all forms of the game, and that was certainly my intention, but unfortunately come that summer I had a reoccurrence of a previous back injury. So since that first year I haven't played any four-day cricket for Sussex, which, you know, on one side is a shame, but the club handled that situation really well. It was a situation that could have forced me to retire, and it was an option that I faced. I remember being sat in the boardroom just behind us now, with Zach Tomasi, who was the chief exec at the time, Mark Robinson, head coach, John Morali, Paul Corey, the physios, and the club doctor as well. And they kind of went through my options, and yeah, I was 22 years old, and facing the prospect of retirement, which wasn't a nice place to be. Obviously I didn't choose that, and I decided to try and see how we go just playing T20. And look, I've had injuries obviously since then, but you know, nothing major like that, and I've had a good shift down here now. Next summer will be my 10th year at Sussex, which is a long time, and it's a place I've settled here now. You know, my wife and I, we live here, we're raising our kids here. My daughter's about to start school next year. We're planning on living here for, you know, forever, hopefully. It's somewhere that I love playing cricket. It's a great place to play cricket. There's good people around. We've got great facilities. As we considering we're not a test match ground, there's not. I don't have any reason to leave or want to leave. Of course, it would have been nice to have won the Blast at some point. We've fallen short a few times, but I'm feeling really good about, you know, my place at the club. I've got a good relationship now with Paul Farbrace. I'm meeting him in a couple of weeks to just look to the future and what plans are. But it's a place that I've loved playing for the last 9 seasons, and hopefully I've got, you know, I'll stay here and keep playing T20s for as long as the club want me. I owe a lot to the club. They give me a lot in terms of security all year round, even though I only play in June and July essentially, but I'm here 12 months of the year. I train with the boys all year round. I like to think I give a lot to the boys as well and the club. I don't know if I'd have gotten that same treatment and same kind of respect, I guess, and looked after as well at other counties maybe. So yeah, it's a place very special to me, and hopefully I've got a few more years left here.
Well, I mean, you definitely are a massive asset to Sussex. You bring in crowds, you bring in fans. Talking of which, actually, there's one game I actually remember of yours in particular. In 2016, a very famous figure had come to Sussex. It was a massive game. I'm pretty sure the whole crowd was here just to watch Mr. Chris Gayle coming back. I think first ball went for four. Second ball, pretty sure he's gone. How was that moment for you, and kind of that sort of sense of stardom? How have you kind of dealt with that? Because of course, playing for England as well, it comes with a lot of fanatics, if you will, probably coming at you, and fans, but also, you know, a lot of people that are now interested in you, except your famous persona, I guess.
Yeah, I'd never class myself as famous, but yeah, that moment down here at home, I remember it obviously very well. It was a turning point in my career. It was quite early on in my career, so 2016. I hadn't played for England at that point. I was still, you know, I was only maybe a year or two into my time here at Sussex, and I remember that winter before, I'd spent a lot of time getting fit and kind of trying to get my body right, having had a tough year the year before when I was faced with retirement. So it was all building up. I think, if I remember correctly, it was, I think, the first game of the Blast that year, we got rained off. So I was waiting for the Blast to kind of come around, and then that first game got rained off, I believe. And then that second night, yeah, we played Somerset down here. It was a cold night. I think Chris Gayle had only maybe just stepped off the plane. I think he had about 15 jumpers on. I don't know how much interest, to be honest, he had in playing the game here, but I certainly was very, very pumped up. It was obviously written in the stars that Sky were broadcasting the game on TV, so the game then goes around the world. I came running in down the hill, and bold, good speed, good pace, and there was that clip of obviously when I got him out, it obviously went viral, I guess, and it got my name right out there. Obviously, a lot of people knew who I was, but having those moments broadcast on TV with the commentary, with the spectacle, the crowd, and things like that, it does a lot, and it did a lot for my career. It kind of really, really thrust me out there, and I played for England, I think maybe a month or so later, which was amazing considering kind of 12 months prior I could have retired. So it definitely, as I said, got my name out there, and I certainly kicked on from there, and yeah, you could say that was definitely the turning point in my career.
Yeah, I have to say, I was talking to my brother about it actually, and that's the one thing he told me to actually ask you about. He was like, I remember that night like the back of my hand. It's an incredible game to get to see and get to kind of be there for. Touching base on England actually, of course you played in the World Cup in 2022. We were actually, a very funny story, we were actually here watching a county championship game in kind of the September before, and I think you were out just training on the pitch a little bit, and again, my brother and I were quite big fans, so we sit there and we're like, oh, it's Tamal Mills, and you pick up the phone, and you look very excited, and I turned around to my own mum and I said, I think he's got the call, I think he's got the call for the World Cup, and then shortly after, of course, your name was on the thing. But we must ask, like, how was that World Cup for you? In incredible World Cup, you won it, basically. There's nothing else to say. 12 matches for England and 12 wickets with best figures of 3 for 27 against Bangladesh. How has that experience been for you playing, you know, in that international stage and playing different pros, I guess, from that, you know, you see on TV, etc.?
Yeah, look, my England career has been spotty. I haven't played anywhere near as much for England as what I would have liked. I played that one game after in 2016. There was a one-off game against Sri Lanka, which I played in, which went well. But then from there, I didn't really play for England for a while. I had a lot of injuries that came in the years gone by, whether that be minor things, pulled hamstrings and stuff. But I think I went like 5-6 years in between playing for England again after I played in India in 2017, I think, and then I didn't play again until that T20 World Cup in the UAE in 2021, was it? Getting that call up again, I'd just come back off, I had quite a bad stress fracture, so I had kind of 8 months out of the game, which was really hard, and then I came back and did well for Sussex in the Blast. And then I bowled really well in the 100 in the first year that the 100 got started. And yeah, I remember that day when I knew that they were picking the World Cup squad had been picked in and around there, and I knew I was in and around it. But I was keeping my phone on me. I came out, I remember, you know, very, very vividly. You were obviously here as well. It was lunchtime of a 4-day game, and I came out just to have a bowl in the middle, and my phone rang, and it was Chris Silverwood, who was England head coach at the time, and he called me and said that I was in the World Cup squad, having, as I said, not played for England for I think 5-6 years previous to that. So that was a great feeling, and heading out to the World Cup and being part of that team again. Unfortunately, I got injured in that World Cup, which was really hard, and I missed the quarter final, which the boys lost. But then being part of the World Cup again, there was another World Cup the year after that was delayed because of COVID. And although I didn't play, we won in Australia. So to be part of the last two England T20 World Cups has been amazing. And hopefully there's another T20 World Cup next year in the Caribbean that we'll see what happens there. I'd love to be a part of that. I want to play as much for England as I can before I retire. I have to remind people that I'm only 31 still. Everybody seems to think, because I've been around for quite a long time, everyone thinks I'm kind of pushing mid-30s and almost ready to retire. But, you know, I only just turned 31, so fingers crossed I've got a lot of cricket, whether it be for here, for Sussex, for franchise cricket around the world, and hopefully for England as well. But, yeah, I just want to play as much cricket at a high level as possible and keep enjoying it whilst I do.
Awesome to hear. Now going into kind of a subject that, you know, might be slightly hard to talk about. As you've mentioned, you've had a lot of injuries, and of course that has definitely impacted your career. How do you think you've come back from setbacks like that, and how have you come back stronger? And also, talking about kind of setbacks, when do you kind of get that validation that, you know, you're doing well and you know that everything's kind of going all right for you?
Yeah, it's a great question, and unfortunately it's something that I've gotten very good at. I've had a lot of injuries, and you have every time you come back for it. And I wish I haven't had so many injuries in my career, but, you know, that's the way it's panned out. Looking back, I'm sure if I could have my time again, there could have been things that I could have done to better protect my body in the long run. But, you know, we live and learn as we get older. But yeah, I feel I've got a good process now of when I get injured, I give myself time to hurt and to be annoyed and to be frustrated and upset and angry, whatever that emotion might be. And then I'm somebody that needs a plan. So, you know, often it's quite linear with cricket. Well, you'll go for a scan, you'll find out what the injury is, you'll get a rough time frame, and then you can kind of, I like to have something to aim for at the back end, a tournament, a series, whatever it might be. Okay, so that's what I need to aim for. That's what I want to try and do. And then you can work back from there. And then, yeah, it's just about staying vigilant and doing what you can. So often it's gym work and running work or whatever it is. The harder ones are bone injuries, so stress fractures, because you can't really do anything until the bone heals. So I had to I was in a back brace for 5 months, I think it was, during COVID, when I had a stress fracture in my back, which was difficult because I had a 3-4-month-old daughter then, and you're trying to pick up a kid when you can't bend your back and things like that. So that was tough. That was probably the toughest mentally that I've had to deal with. But ultimately, every time I get injured, I ask myself, what do I want to do? And it's get back on the park and play cricket. That's what I love doing. I want to do that for as long as I can. And as you said, in terms of validation, so far, every time I've come back from an injury, I've come back to a high level, and I feel like I'm still able to produce what I want to produce. At some point, that does drop off, and then that makes it harder to come back from injuries when you know you're not quite the same bowler that maybe you once were. It makes those low points that bit harder to come back from. So I'm not naive to the fact that that will happen at some point, but fingers crossed. Now, I think I've got a good work ethic. I work hard, and I've actually, touch wood, I've had a pretty good run of injuries this year. I haven't missed, I played the full blast campaign this year for Sussex, which is something I haven't always been able to do. I played full part of the 100 this year as well, and now I've had a nice break of no cricket before going into the winter tournaments once the World Cup finishes. So as I said, I'm well versed in injuries, and it's harder when you get older. You've got family, and I've got a wife and kids and stuff, so it isn't just all about you. You know, my injuries affect more than just myself. So on one side, that makes that harder, because when you're losing earning potential and things like that, and you're trying to set yourself up for the future and your family up, that's harder to take. But on the flip side, you know, my daughter and my son, they don't care if I'm injured or if I've had a bad day at cricket or anything like that. They just want you to be daddy. So it's both sides of the coin, I guess.
Can I just jump in here, Regina? Just thinking, Tamal, I mean, it's quite a, going round the world, playing international tournaments, playing here in the summer and then going round, it is quite a stress on anybody's body these days, isn't it? Do you see this as an issue going forward with so many of these tournaments?
It can be, yeah. For batters, less so. Your batters can kind of keep playing all year round. It's maybe mental fatigue and stuff that might kick in. But I think the one thing I've learned as a bowler is I can't be too greedy. And there is a temptation to sometimes just strike whilst the iron's hot and, okay, I'm fit, I'm doing well, I want to play. But you need to, I need to find little gaps and little windows where maybe I say, okay, I'll have to turn something down, take 2-4 weeks out, come home, you know, just recharge a little bit and then go again. And especially now I've got a family, if I'm not able to take my family to a tournament with me, I can't just disappear for 6 months. You know, it's not fair on my wife, it's not fair on my children. So I try not to be away from them for, you know, more than a month if I don't have to be. There are so many opportunities, which is brilliant. So you've just got to find that balance.
And the USA calls, does it?
Maybe it's the trouble that also it clashes with the English summer. Right. And one thing, part of my agreement with Sussex is I'll always play a full part of the Blast. I'm never going to leave Sussex to go and play somewhere elsewhere. Right. If anything works in and around. So, for example, this year we got knocked out in the group stage of the Blast, which meant I was able to go to Zimbabwe to play. Like the window just it worked well. But if there's ever a clash, you know, I'm always fully contracted and fully available for Sussex in the months that the Blast is on. And that won't change moving forward.
Great, thanks.
Again, so a tournament that you've actually mentioned already, a tournament that you've won as well, the 100. How has that experience been for you, and how has it been playing a new format?
Yeah, look, I love the 100. Obviously, I understand a lot of people don't, and I'll go toe to toe with them if they want to have a debate with me about it. But to play in it is brilliant. As you say, we won it that first year, and we lost in the eliminator this year. So I've had a lot of success in it. It's a tournament that's gone well for me personally. I've done well in it and reaped the rewards of doing well. In terms of learning the new format, it was a lot easier than what we anticipated. I remember that first year, everybody was a little bit like, oh God, this is going to be so different. But once we played one practice game, and it's not too dissimilar, really. I think it's harder for captains to captain the games. The nuances are a lot different there for the captains. But as players, if anything, I think it's slightly easier for the bowler. You've got four less balls that can get hit for boundaries. I really enjoy it. And like, hopefully it sticks around. But I know a lot of people maybe don't agree with me there.
Well, actually, recently in the 100, you've become the second player to take a hat-trick in the 100 against Welsh Fire, I believe. How was that? And what was that kind of feeling like?
Yeah, it was on my birthday as well. So that was this year. So yeah, it was my birthday in Cardiff. I took a hat trick here at Hove against Glamorgan quite a few years ago now. So I've got two professional hat tricks, which is pretty cool. With T20 cricket, it can happen. Batters trying to hit you for six and such. You can easily just hit one up in the air. But as I said, I bowl at a time. I bowl at the death where it can go one way or the other a lot of the time. You also have games where you can, you know, travel around and get hit for plenty of boundaries. So that day went well for me. And as I keep saying, hopefully I have a few more good days ahead.
Awesome. What a day to get it on. That's not too bad of a day to get on. Now, going on to kind of more of a different topic, of course, October is Black History Month, celebrating achievements and successes of ethnic minorities within our communities. You are undeniably a role model for many younger children and kind of the youth in BAME communities, myself included. How do you go about inspiring and promoting kind of the BAME communities in a world that is so ever-changing with so much going on?
Yeah, I think just being visible and visibility is key, and it's probably something I could do more of, to be honest, as everybody can. It's something that you certainly don't know that you're doing a lot of the time. Just by being a player of an ethnic minority, relatively in the public eye, you know, it can be, as you say, inspiring, I guess, to some young people. And, you know, seeing familiar faces or similar faces and skin colours, and no matter if that's, you know, black, brown, Asian, whatever it might be. So that's just being is important. And we've had a lot of black players here at Sussex. We probably had more than most here the last 10 years or so. As I say, I'm a Chance to Shine ambassador as well. So do things for them when I can. Just try and do, it's only little things, isn't it? And being approachable, being, you know, just being a good person, really, I guess. Just not shying away from it. days like the foundation days and things like that that go on the outfield here, just popping in, saying hi. I don't probably think of it too much, I guess, but I think it's important to not shy away from it and embrace it for what it is. And as you say, cricket isn't the most diverse sport. It isn't the most... It certainly has a lot of barriers and a lot of obstacles, especially for young people from disadvantaged backgrounds. Doesn't matter if they're minorities or not. It isn't the most accessible sport. I know that growing up. I had a lot of help growing up. I had help from grants and charities and things to help with kit. I grew up in a single parent family and had to travel a lot, and I had financial difficulties that came with cricket. And luckily, I got help, which was really great. There are avenues there, and it's been great to see the last 5-6 years. There's obviously a lot of work that's gone into it, and hopefully we'll reap the rewards of that as these programs grow over the years. And you know, it's going to be a generational thing. The knock-on effects, you're not really going to see that much change in the next 2 to 5 years, but hopefully in 10 to 20 to 30 years, you'll see a lot more people have opportunities, and the pathways will just be that bit bigger and open and a bit easier, I think.
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, of course, with recent events that have been released in cricket, etc., it's become quite a topic of conversation, and I think a lot of people have started to realise more and more what we could better do for cricket, and I definitely think you're a key ambassador in that, so we thank you for that. Kind of talking about that a little bit more, do you feel like there was any kind of difficulties for you growing up, kind of being from that ethnic minority background, as you said, you know, kind of coming more from a background where you really had to work hard and push and basically excel at what you are and perform? Do you feel like there were any difficulties that kind of came with that at all?
Not in terms of my ethnicity, but it was more, for me, it was more geographical and economical for me, just where I grew up and my family situation and those type of things. But no, I've been very fortunate. I haven't had any negative experiences in terms of racism or things like that. Again, my first dressing room at Essex was probably one of the more diverse changing rooms in the county game at the time. We had a few other black players, we had Asian players, and I said this a few years ago, I'm sure the biggest change in cricket now would be the light-hearted banter and things like that. It is certainly, if it's one of those, and this doesn't matter if it's just cricket, I'm sure society as well, things that were said 10 years ago when I was a youngster, and just general things that I know in my heart of hearts, a genuine no malicious intent or ill intent wouldn't be appropriate now. I can accept that, and I'm sure everybody, if we could had a magic glass and could look back to conversations, maybe you're obviously a lot younger than me, but 10 years ago, 15 years ago, things were just different, and I think that is important to a certain degree to understand. So that's something that I know and have seen in this last kind of 4 or 5 years now, that within cricket, whether it be coaching staff or players or whoever, are a lot more aware of what you say and how that can potentially affect other people, or how it can affect an environment, a changing room, and things like that. So I've certainly seen a change in the positive, but I know I've also been very lucky where I never felt discriminated against because of the colour of my skin or anything like that as a youngster growing up or throughout my pathway within cricket.
No, I appreciate that. It's good to see different perspectives on it. I mean, of course, as you said, like, it's a big conversation in cricket, but it's good to see that you haven't, you know, had to deal with that, especially with, as you said, you know, the rise to kind of fame around the world, etc. Now on to more kind of like light-hearted questions, I guess. So of course you've played a lot of cricket around the world in many franchise tournaments. What I have to say, what has been your favourite franchise tournament to play in, would you say? I think that's a difficult question to ask you, but yeah.
You're right, it's very difficult. I've been lucky enough to play in pretty much most of the big overseas franchise tournaments. The IPL is obviously brilliant to play, and I've been lucky enough to play for two franchises in the IPL. I haven't done as well in those tournaments as what I would have liked, but yeah, like, the IPL is second to none in terms of grandeur and just the spectacle, and the matches are brilliant. They're, you know, big stadiums that are full to the rafters, and the atmosphere is incredible. And you're rubbing shoulders and playing with the best players in the world. It has its challenges as well. It's long, and if you're not in the team, it's difficult. You know, it's a long time to be, you know, in India just training, and if you're not in the side and things like that. So, you know, it goes on for 8-9 weeks. It is a long slog, but I love the Big Bash. Going to Australia is always great. So it's a great place to spend, you know, 5, 6, 7 weeks, however long that might be. There's not many bad ones, to be honest. There are some which obviously have less. You're kind of having you're doing less socially, obviously, or because of security reasons and things like that. When you're going to Bangladesh and Pakistan and these places, you're obviously a bit more restricted in what you can do away from the cricket. So that has its different challenges. But you know, I love playing franchise cricket, and it also means I get to spend as little time in England in the winter as I can. That's certainly how I kind of view my kind of October through to March, is how many days I can spend away and in nice weather at least. But like franchise cricket's, you know, it's given me so many opportunities. I've learned a lot from it about different people, different cultures. I get to meet all different people that I wouldn't normally get to meet and just hang out with. And I try not to just go spend my 4 weeks there, play my cricket, take my cash and then leave. You want to try and leave something and just get to know people a little bit, you know, learn something about another, you know, culture, religion, place, whatever you might be. So I think those things are important, because once I stop playing cricket, you know, those opportunities will dry up, and you're not going to get paid to travel as much and spend time in these places that most people don't get to go to.
Thank you for that. I mean, franchise cricket is ever growing around the world, so it's definitely it's cool to see you getting to get involved in so many different ones, especially like different countries that maybe you wouldn't visit if it wasn't for cricket, basically. That kind of concludes everything I wanted to say and everything I wanted to ask. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Keith. Yeah. Do you have anything to
add? No, that's great. Thanks very much, Tamal, for coming along and talking to us and just giving us an insight and giving our listeners an insight into the career of a travelling franchise player around the world. So that's been really good. And thanks for all the help with the questions, Regina. Thanks very much, and do like our podcasts so that they will drop straight into your inbox next time we record one.